Hi, everybody. Welcome to this edition of It's Brewing at McEwen, a USF baseball podcast. I'm your host, Mark Giardino, and today I'm joined tonight by one of my co-hosts, John Kaplan. Before we get started, just your friendly reminder to like and follow It's Brewing at McEwen on whatever platform you tune in on. And be sure to turn on notifications to stay up to date on all things related to USF baseball. It is Wednesday night, February 26, 2025. And last night, we saw the Bulls take down an in-state opponent, FIU, in a close back and forth game via a score of 6-5. John, how are you doing? And what were your impressions and thoughts from watching last night's game?
I'm doing well, Mark. For starters, I don't think I gave enough credit to what FIU has cooking on their roster, both from a pitching standpoint and an offensive standpoint. They really had quite a bit of talent across the board, and in my opinion, could finish as a top three team in a very difficult Conference USA, which produced two tournament teams, if you can remember last year, Louisiana Tech and Dallas Baptist. I don't know that. I think it's going to come down to like individual matchups versus those teams if they can surpass one of those two. But I definitely could see them finishing top three. But without going into too much detail, what I will say is that the conversations we've had with Coach Hannes and his emphasis on culture are on full display every time this team takes a field. You know, we're seeing this team play mad and play with grit, like Adam has mentioned several times this season. We let a league get away from us in a huge momentum swing from Florida International, and had to regather ourselves in order to get the job done last night. It's wins like these, in my opinion, that serve as pillars to success down the line. You know, and we're also seeing a camaraderie amongst these guys early on, which, as you know, is not easy to do with a roster that features 24 new faces, if I'm not mistaken. So in our first interview with Coach Hannes, he mentioned playing for the guys on your island. We're seeing this team come together and play for each other night in and night out, which is honestly great to see this early on in the season. Mark, why don't you break this game down for us and give us some of your thoughts?
Yeah, definitely. And I think before we get into that, I'm going to give a more detailed kind of breakdown of the game. That'll be our second segment. Segment three, we're doing a little thing called Cappy's Corner here. Get John's observations and stats and discussion points from so far into the season. We're about 2.5 weeks exactly. And then the last segment, we will be doing a little preview of the team out east and that matchup that will be occurring at home Friday through Sunday. So those are the segments that we're going to be doing. So looking forward to diving into some of the stuff. But first thing first, we got to watch a lot of baseball last night, a lot of good back and forth. We got to see a lot of different arms come in for USF. We had actually six different pitchers make an appearance. We actually had a season debut as well. But I'll kind of get into it from beginning to end. You know, it was pretty nice seeing in the first inning, the Bulls got to two outs, and we got a walk, I think, from Lance Triple to kind of extend the inning. And then Sebastian Greco just continues his very hot start for the Bulls. I mean, he had a home run over the weekend at Georgia Southern, and his home run last night against FIU, given the situation, two outs, and just absolutely pulls it down the right field, right over the right field fence. More of a laser than a moonshot, but a laser that had some carry to it as well. So, I mean, thing about Sebastian Greco is, you know, you're looking at a guy that has, I can't remember the exact number, but somewhere near like 500 Division I at bats, you know, over his career, or maybe 400. But I mean, that experience that he has, and he's probably seen every type of pitch you could see at the Division I level. Nothing is really surprising him at this point. And he's just letting his kind of natural abilities and power come out and he's showing it at a really high level. You could see why he has over 30 career home runs at the Division I level. Then kind of going to the top of the second, we got to see Bryce Archie, make his, what was that, his third start? Third start of the season. Or second start of the season. Yes, second start of the season. It was solid again. I mean, obviously against FSU was pretty nice, three innings, no runs. In this game, he had three innings, two runs, but only one was earned. He had some scenarios. The first inning was really smooth. I think it was three up, three down. And then the top of the second, he got into a little bit of trouble, ended up working his way out of that. So we were leading 2-0 heading into the. I'm sorry, he allowed a run in the top of the second. So we were heading 2-1 heading into the bottom of the second. And then bottom of the second, we had RBI double from Ryan Pruitt, who continues his hot start. I mean, just continuing to be like the do-it-all player for the Bulls. Not only hit that RBI double, also had a stolen base, also scored on a wild pitch. So he's a guy like, obviously, the first weekend was crazy, hitting that grand slam and making the AAC honor roll, which was awesome. But he just continues to stay consistent and continues to be a really good player in and out every day for this team. And then, so that gave his RBI double, and then I think I'm not sure, another run scored, I think from oh yeah, he scored on my pitch. So 4-2, 4-1 after 2 innings. Bryce Archie in the third inning, which was his last inning of work, got into a little bit of trouble again as well. He actually gave up three straight base hits when there was one out. And the FIU was threatening to potentially tie the game because they had already made it 4-2. They had runners on base, but Bryce Archie did something that somebody with his stuff, somebody with his velocity is capable of doing, and that's ending the inning with two straight strikeouts to limit the damage. Again, I saw some really good things out of him. I saw his ability to land a breaking ball for strikes. I know he got a guy looking for a strikeout on a breaking ball. And he also, flashed a changeup that had some. That generated some swing and miss on a lefty as the changeup was tailing away from the lefty. So, I mean, to me, from what I could see, it looks like Bryce Archie's got about three really solid pitches that he's leveraging. Obviously, his fastball, and he's got one of the best velocities on the team, throwing in the mid 90s, 94, 95. And I know he could run that up even higher as he gets more into baseball shape. And then, but yeah, the curveball, landing that for strikes, the changeup, get the fading arm side run on that, generating swing and miss. Really good to see. Obviously, he was limited to three innings. As he continues to build up and kind of sticks with a midweek role for now. But he did get up to 65 pitches, which wasn't the most efficient. Obviously, when you do 3 innings, you want to see maybe more in the range of 45 to 50 pitches. But it was more about just giving up some hits, really. He didn't really struggle with control per se. Six strikeouts and one walk is actually a fantastic ratio, but five base hits, just getting hit a little bit, was the only thing there. But 65 pitches, again, looking for a little more efficiency from him going forwards. But the fact that he's out there for us and playing this significant of a role compared to last season, where he was really just getting his feet wet again in baseball, and now you see that he's really building up to something good there. So that's kind of the first 3 innings, and I want to hear your thoughts on this, John. As we go to the top of the fourth, we got to see the debut of Matt Goldenbaum, somebody who was a redshirt with us last year and made his collegiate debut last night. What do you think when he came into the game, and what were your thoughts on that?
To be honest, I thought that maybe he should have come in after Nedro against Georgia Southern. What I thought is that he worked quick He worked down in the zone and hit the corners really well. We don't we our broadcast doesn't display velo, but if I had to guess, he would be high 80s to lower 90s. He
No,
really.
we actually got a reading from, I think, the radio announcer. He's a 95.
Oh, okay. Well,
Yeah.
that is cool. So he's low to mid 90s and really works the corners, and despite the umpire not being able to see anything below, the lower thighs last night, there's no low strike available whatsoever. He really did work well when he worked low in the zone. He came out for a second inning and ran into a bit of trouble. I think he gave up his first hit in that third of an inning that he was able to finish. But I'm really excited to see what the Golden Bear is going to, or Golden Bull, mind you, is going to be able to do for us moving forward. Really exciting stuff, really efficient. And I think we saw a little fist pump or glove slap there after the end of that first inning in relief. So I like a little fire.
Yeah, no, that was awesome. I mean, it's so funny because I do remember that I watched him in one of the fall scrimmages and I had some really positive notes about him. I think he worked very efficiently. The one inning I saw him pitch in the fall was three up, three down, pounded the zone. I could see that he had a velocity. I didn't know exactly how high it was, did not have a radar gun. But yeah, to hear Jay Rutcher, the radio announcer, say that he hit 95 on the gun, as a redshirt freshman making his collegiate debut. That's very promising. And also, the game was close. When he entered the game, it was a 4-2 game. And I feel like Coach Hanna's, coaches every single game like it's the Super Bowl. Like he wants to win every single game, and I absolutely love that about him. So the thing is, like, I was almost surprised to see a collegiate debut occur, in the fourth inning of a tight game against an in-state rival. But when you actually see him pitch, you're like, oh, all right, makes sense why he's making a debut right now. Very similar to how we saw our other Nolan Bernard make his debut, the freshman. Like, you weren't expecting it, but he just comes out and does his thing. So, I mean, the fact you got two young pitchers like that on this team that are, already showing velocity and ability to get big outs is really awesome. And then we'll kick to the top of the fifth inning. But at that point, the game was still 4-2. That's the inning that Golden Bomb did give up a hit and a walk. And he had to be relieved by none other than the man, the myth, the legend, Corey Kling. Absolutely incredible what that guy is doing thus far this season. But it's not really a surprise to anyone that's been following the team since last year. I mean, even before that, I mean, Matthew did a little high school recruit podcast with him a few years ago, and he was already doing big things at his high school, West Boca High School. Was extremely locked down, low ERA, all the things. And then last year, only got about 8 or 9 innings for us and had, I want to say, like a sub-3, sub-2 ERA. Did the same thing in a summer ball, and lo and behold, he's got 8 innings thrown this year with a 0.0 ERA. He comes in and gives us 2.2 innings of relief work with no earned runs allowed, 2 strikeouts. Again, it's just like cool and collected from a guy like him. I mean, that's really what I could say is, like, obviously he's not gonna come in throwing crazy gas. I mean, he throws about 90, which is plenty of velocity when you can locate like he does and when you have a pitch mix like he does. Yeah, I mean, can't say enough about what he's doing. During that period though, when he was in the game, the Bulls bats went quiet. We had innings 3 through 7, they didn't score any runs at all. And to be honest, I'll tip my cap to former USF pitching coach Carson Whitson. His staff, I mean, they have some nasty stuff. I mean, One of the lowlights of yesterday's game is the fact that we struck out, I think, 14 times. Don't want to do that too often. But if you actually watch some of these pitches that some of these FIU guys had, I mean, it's understandable. I mean, you had some nasty breaking balls. That middle relief guy they had, just yeah, pretty solid from FIU pitching wise. And I think what ended up being the downfall for FIU was more of a tactical decision, actually. That kid who I'm talking about, his name was, who was that? Trayson Cameron. He was looking awesome through like two whatever innings. And I think he has like two outs in the eighth inning, but he's starting to kind of struggle a little bit. And they have a lefty warming up in the bullpen who's like an experienced pitcher for them. And Marcus Bardell's at the plate, who, for us is a powerful left-handed bat. The last thing I expected was them to leave up their righty, who was starting to get tired out there, but they did, fortunately. And Marcus Bardell knew exactly what to do, took full advantage of that, hit a laser of a line drive up the middle, drove in the go-ahead run. And then Carter Murphy gets on base as well. He ends up scoring on a wild pitch. Yeah, so Bulls take a 6-4 lead, and then the ninth inning. I'll kind of go back to the top of the eighth. Actually, we actually got to see Aiden Longoria come in for what originally was a save situation, or yes, a yeah save situation. We're up 4-3. And he kind of just struggled a little bit in the beginning, which was uncharacteristic for how he's been pitching so far this season. But he was able to navigate some trouble. The bases were loaded with no outs, and luckily he only yielded one run, which allowed the game to stay tied. Bottom of the eighth is when we got those runs that I just described. And then the top of the ninth, we had a 6-4 lead. Aiden was left in to start the ninth. Obviously, wanting to instill confidence in him, saying, "Hey, you had, shaky inning, but we'll go right back to you." It just wasn't his best night, but I mean, he's still having a great season, and he's gonna have a tremendous role down the road. And actually, he ends up getting a win anyway. So sometimes it just works out for you like that. But Brandon Keister, the Indiana transfer, left-handed pitcher, came in, got two crucial outs with two runners on base to help preserve that lead. And we ended up getting one final out from Landon Yurek, the JUCO transfer from Texas. And yeah, those two guys with the long blonde hair were the guys that closed the ninth inning. I mean, it was actually really good to see that from Keister and Yurek both, because their last outing in Georgia Southern wasn't their best. So to see coach like keep the confidence in them to go right back to them literally the next game and put them in a massive spot, even though they previously had struggled their previous time out. I mean, I absolutely love that. I think that shows players that, hey, it's okay to sometimes not have your best performance. I still believe in you. We're still going to put you back out there. You earned your role for a reason. And we're gonna, allow you to play freely. And if sometimes that doesn't lead to the best results, it's okay as long as you continue to day in, day out, show up and put forth the great effort and continue to improve as the season goes on, which I think these guys are all doing, which is awesome to see. But yeah, any closing thoughts, John, on the FIU game?
I would just also like to tip my hat to Carson Whitson. I mean, I think that he may have thrown some of his better arms out against us. Owen Puck hadn't given up an earned run on the season, the starting pitcher of that game, all season long, and we got him. We did get him, fortunately, for four earned runs on the card. But followed by that, the Juan Villarreal looking like, just a seasoned veteran and just looking absolutely dominant on the mound. He looked really good. And then, followed by Trace and Cameron. Those three dudes, especially Villarreal and Cameron, they really dominated us and kind of put our bats in a dormant situation. And that was not great to see. We saw us kind of panic a little bit, getting a little swing happy, and it seemed like maybe we were kind of abandoning the plan, going up to the plate a little bit. But an interesting note is that Whitson and older brother of Owen Puck played together at UF, and I think that that might be why FIU is able to land a name like Owen Puck for their roster. But no, I just really just want to tip my hat to that pitching staff and to Whitson. It was good seeing him back in Tampa, and I know that despite getting a loss, I know that from speaking to him personally, he enjoyed his return to Tampa as well.
Nice. Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, it was definitely a lot of good pitching on display last night. There was 10 strikeouts by our staff, 14 strikeouts by their staff. Don't see that all the time in a midweek baseball game, but that was pretty interesting. So we'll kick it to our next segment here. John, we're gonna go here with Cappy's Corner. What are some things on your minds? What are some of your observations so far, as we're about 2.5 weeks into the season, any key takeaways or thoughts?
So I want to start by with something that I've noticed throughout, the first 2.5, 3 weeks of play. One thing that I know for certain to be true is that you need to be able to turn over that the bottom half of the order to the top of the lineup in order to have success. And we heard Adam and Matt allude to, how we have several different players that we feel as though could be qualified to be leadoff hitters. And we've got Lowry, we've got Matt Rose, we've got Pruitt, so those three really come to mind in terms of leadoff. But one thing that I've seen is our ability to turn that bottom half of the lineup over to the top half, and that comes with 9-hole success. As a whole, we have seen the 9-hole produce a line of 12 for 27 with 6 walks and 11 RBIs. Murphy in that midweek game against FSU went 2 for 3 with a ribby. And then Pruitt and Rose have both experienced some a decent amount of time at in the 9-hole. Pruitt going 5 for 9, 3 walks and 6 RBIs, whereas Matt Rose has been 5 for 12 with 3 walks and 4 RBIs. I believe the Sunday game against Georgia Southern really come into mind from Matt Rose. I honestly would be able to. I would feel comfortable putting our 9-hole stats up against any position in our 1 through 9 offensively.
Yeah.
And I don't know that you're going to see numbers like that. I think it's been extremely unique. It's been extremely beneficial. And I think that despite, like what the stereotypes say about 9-hole hitting, I spent a lot of time in the 9-hole as a hitter. That's why I stuck to pitching. However, having weapons like Pruitt and Rose in that 9-hole really gives you that double leadoff kind of situation, and really just kind of breeds, productive innings. And I really hope to see one of them navigating that 9-hole throughout the rest of the season. I'm really happy with that production, and I would love to see it continue moving forward. And then lastly, for Cappy's Corner, I'm wrapping it up with evaluating the weekend rotation. Thus far, we've had 2 weekend series, both of them going pretty well for us, but leaving a little bit left to be desired in terms of the Saturday and Sunday starts, in my opinion. I'd like to see more from these guys, but hopefully they can clean it up a bit. In terms of the Friday starts, Corey Braun, the left-handed transfer, he's a redshirt junior, has been absolutely lights out. He's every time he runs into trouble, He, just straps it on and gets the job done. He's got a 2.45 ERA on the season through two starts, 11 innings pitched, given up nine hits, three earned, and has posted a 13-5 strikeout to walk ratio. I can't speak enough on how impressed I am with this kid. He's got arm side run on pretty much all of his pitches except for the breaking ball, obviously. But that fastball changeup combination is lethal. He's a swing and miss guy. He's low to mid 90s with his fastball and just really knows how to buckle down in those high leverage spots and get the job done. Next is James Hill, junior right-hander. He's had two starts going 6 2/3 innings, giving up five earned on seven hits with three walks, and Jorge D. Cardenas also has had a couple shaky starts, where both of them have shown flashes where you see exactly what Mitch Haniz is seeing, but then there's times when they run into trouble and they don't have the same success that Braun has had in navigating this trouble. DeCardenas has gone 5 2/3 over two starts with 11 hits allowed, five earned, six Ks, and four walks. In terms of the starting rotation, that kind of wraps up the stats. Mark, what are your thoughts on how the weekend rotation has panned out thus far?
Yeah, I think you make a lot of good points. Obviously, Corey Braun has been exceptional, holding down that Friday night role and just continually improving. Obviously, even his second start was even better than the first. I think one thing to take note of with James Hill, I think his stats might be a little misleading because to me, the second start was significantly better than the first. I think in his first start, he only made it into like the beginning of the third inning. And in that second start, we saw him get one out away from what really would have been a really good outing, or still was a good outing. Five innings, two runs. He was only one out away from that. I've seen him pitch in person at the opening weekend. But see, watching his start on TV, this past weekend, I actually got more appreciation for his pitches and pitch movement and things of that nature. And I can actually start to like appreciate, why he did win that Saturday role out of camp. He has good movement, and he locates well. And even though his velocity will sit roughly between 88 to 90 miles per hour, he just knows how to pitch, and he really got outs pretty efficiently this past week against Georgia Southern. And I feel pretty confident that he'll continue to do that. And then my last thought on Jorge DeCardenas, he's a guy that like looks good. Like when you watch him pitch, like there's you can see the velocity. He's a higher velocity than James Hill. He's probably 91 and 93. I know up in the summer he was up to 94, 95. But the numbers aren't quite there yet. And I think the main part of that has been he's been giving up probably a bit more base hits than he would like. But he definitely has the stuff. I think that, coach likes to keep the roles constant for the first month of the season. At least that's kind of what he told us in the previous podcasts. So I think he'll get another opportunity this Sunday. And if he doesn't, that's perfectly fine too. I think he's still going to have a big role to play for the team going forwards. And Sunday they noticed he was getting into trouble early. They got him out of there and got some good relief help. And that's kind of my thoughts on the three current starting pitchers, but I'll kick it back to you, John. I know you wanted to talk a little bit about Jack Nedrow and how you think that he may potentially be able to do that for us as well.
Well, obviously, I'm not in a position to make those calls, but just with the high leverage appearances that we've seen from Nedrow, he's run into some trouble in his appearances. He's had some loud outs, but he's really buckled down in those times to really get the job done. I spoke a little bit earlier about his stat lines and what he's been able to accomplish, but just in terms of the things that aren't on a stat line. You've got a senior pitcher who was, I believe, all conference in his D2 at Lee University last year. He is going to come in and really be able to present with leadership and take hold of his anchor down, a solid, weekend rotation role, in my opinion. I think that he was an early on pick for us for the weekend rotation. And, after seeing him in his three appearances thus far, I think that that's only been, that's only more so prevalent. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think also the role that he has played so far, it's interesting because he's done something that maybe there's not a lot of people on the staff right now that could do that, which is like go out there in the middle of a game and bridge like three innings for you, and then you end up winning the game because of the fact that he, carried those innings for you, and he practically he put us in a position to win the Sunday game at Georgia Southern as well.
100.
Yeah, so I wonder if the only reason that he hasn't been a starter is because like coach needs a guy that can be high leverage plus stretched out as well, which is pretty
Which
rare,
we talked about.
Yeah, so I think it's perfectly fine if he stays in that role, but I also think it's perfectly fine if he starts because we know that he can do that. We know that when he was at Division II Lee University, that's essentially all he did was start. And was very good at it. So I think he just right now he's like a Swiss Army knife kind of weapon for this coaching staff and for this team. But yeah, I mean, as advertised, really. I was excited when we got him because I like seeing the fact that we had a experienced Division II, like I think he made all conference, all American. I'm not exactly sure, but he was really good. And that's something we've been needing for a while, just like guy that come in and eat innings, regardless of whether it's as start or mid relief, regardless, he's or even the back end, he's doing all of that. So, yeah. And then I think, another person that we talked about already, but maybe one point later in the year, we may see him in the weekend rotation is Bryce Archie. When you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that he has a much deserving role to be on our weekend rotation, but due to him being a dual sport athlete, spring football is going on right now, and while Archie's with us during the week, he's not with us during the weekends currently as it stands, and I don't see that schedule changing much. The spring game generally marks the end of spring football. And that spring game is going to be April 26, I believe. So if we see Archie navigate a role into a weekend rotation, which I could potentially see coming in May or maybe even for the conference tournament, when you've got to put your best foot forward, I don't think that that's going to be happening anytime soon. So we're either going to just kind of need to be patient and see the continued progressions from James Hill and DeCardenas, or we're not going to be seeing a change until later on in the season, because even one of our best, in our opinion, one of our best bullpen pitchers, because that's really all we've seen from him, but he would have been our Sunday starter, according to coach, was Austin Newton. He's still a good ways out from his full recovery. And until he can provide, that anchor, that surefire anchor in the bullpen, I don't know how we can afford to lose a name like Jack Nedrow in the back end of our bullpen.
Yeah, that's true. I think he kind of has to hold that role down until Newton can come in and potentially do it. So that's actually a good point. I hadn't thought of that. It's almost as if, maybe that wasn't even plan A, to have him be the back end guy like he is now, but because it's out of necessity, he has essentially done that, which is working out well. Okay, so we'll kick it to our last segment. We want to do a preview of the series this weekend with UCF. So, just giving a little
Who?
context,
Who?
the University of Something Florida. So, I'll give some context to this, right? I mean, we've been doing Bruin since 2021, and from 2021, 2022, and 2023, UCF was still in the AAC. So that's a team that we saw our guys play against two series per year because you always did an extra series with your closest geographic team in your conference. I mean, we must have covered at least 20 to 30 USF versus UCF games over the past 4 to 5 years. So this is like a very familiar matchup. But, now it's like it feels even a little more special to play them now because they're not in our conference. So it's like you don't even know exactly when that's going to happen again. Like, when are they going to come to USF Baseball Stadium and play a 3-game series again after this year? I honestly have no idea. So the fact that it's happening out of conference is very cool. And it's just a completely different look to this matchup than it used to be. I mean, the multiple times that we saw the matchup occur, we were under the previous head coach, and UCF was under their previous head coach, Greg Lovelady, who, was a pretty solid coach for them, always kind of gave them winning seasons, but they never quite made the NCAA tournament. Well, that all changed last year when they brought in Rich Wallace, who is the now their second year head coach, and he came to UCF he was an assistant at Florida State over there with Link Jarrett, and he actually played at UCF roughly about 20 years ago, and he's got a lot of history there. And his first season on the job, he did a tremendous job with the Knights. I mean, they finished the season last year ranked number 30 in the RPI, top 30 in the country. They went 37-21. They made it to the NCAA tournament. They actually played in the Tallahassee Regional, put up some good games against Florida State, but ultimately got knocked out of that regional. And yeah, I mean, they're a program on the rise, very much as we are, So I think the fact that the two teams are meeting at this time when they're both have a lot of positive momentum going for them, is really nice because there were some previous matchups, in prior years where net wasn't necessarily that same vibe. So it's good to see that. This year they are off to a 7-2, 6-2 start, something like that. And so what they've done so far is they have swept Siena at home, who, I mean, last year was one of the worst teams in Division I baseball, so I'm not putting too much stock into that. They did win 2 out of 3 games at home against Bryant, which is actually a really solid mid-major program. Always has winning records. They were top 115 in the country last year, so they're pretty good. They did beat Missouri, who is an SEC team, albeit probably the worst SEC team, if we're being honest. And then they did lose in the midweek to FAU, another one of our conference opponents. So they've won what, four, five, I think 6-2, something like that. So I was not really exactly sure what we're gonna get in terms of just how the two teams will match up. But generally speaking, I've watched them play a little bit. They're pretty athletic overall in the infield. They brought in some transfers. They brought in Diamez Ross, a center fielder that played on Florida State last year. Obviously, with that coach, makes this connection there makes sense. He hits leadoff for them. He's a pretty solid, athletic, versatile player. So defensively, I think they're very athletic. They always pitch well. That's just been a thing. And last year it was a thing. But speaking of pitching, John, you have some thoughts or some scouting on their weekend rotation?
So if there's anything that we know that school from Oviedo can do, it's going to be, especially under the new coach, is they're going to come in and be able to pitch, and they're going to play strong defense. In terms of their rotation, the past 2 weekends we've seen no changes in their rotation. Your Friday night guy is going to be senior right-handed pitcher Don Stagliano. Your Saturday pitcher is going to be redshirt senior right-hander Riley Hartley. And your Sunday guy is going to be redshirt junior right-hander Grant Siegel. Dom Stagliano is a name that we know very well. This is his third season with UCF. He started his collegiate career at Stetson, where he was named A-Sun All-Freshman team, as well as Collegiate Baseball Freshman All-American. He was in the weekend rotation last year and has made both Friday night starts this season. He's proven to be vulnerable in his two starts this year, giving up the most hits on the staff and earned runs on the staff. Not a big swing and miss guy, and he's going to depend on the defense behind him to make plays. He doesn't hand out too many free passes, however, so the Bulls will need to be very aggressive against him and jump on him early and often. In terms of Riley Hartley, the right-handed senior, he was a dual sport athlete out of Campbell University, where he helped the team win three straight Big South Conference championships, as well as three straight college baseball tournament appearances from 2021 to 2023. During this time, not much different from our Bryce Archie. He also served as the quarterback for the Camels as well. He was featured in UCF's rotation last year, and he's made both Saturday starts this year, as well as previously mentioned. He leads the teams in innings pitched, ERA, and strikeouts, and he's also proven to be vulnerable in areas as well. He has allowed the second most hits on staff and is tied for the most walks allowed. He having proven the ability to go deeper into starts, it's going to be crucial for us to capitalize on those mistakes and continue to be aggressive on the base paths and try to force a strong UCF defense to make some mistakes behind him. Lastly is the redshirt junior right-hander Grant Siegel, which for our more devoted fans should sound a little bit familiar, because while this is his first year on staff at UCF, he did spend his freshman year at Tulane, where he had a very productive year. He was named to all second team AAC and posted a 3.02 ERA in nine starts. He moved on to play for West Virginia, where he ran into some struggles, but he's still posted quite competitive stats. In 2024, due to the NCAA transfer rules, he did have to sit out. But in his first year on staff, he's been really productive. He only allowed two hits and zero earned runs in his first start, but got exposed a little bit against Bryant University last weekend. He gave up three earned and four and a third. Siegel, in another note, he when we did face him, he was able to go pretty deep into the game. He went six innings pitched with eight Ks, giving up two earned, four total runs in his winning effort against us. So we're going to look to rewrite some of our shortcomings versus talented right-hander this weekend. Mark, what are your thoughts there?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the two names are very familiar. Obviously, Dom Stagliano, just all the matchups between USF and UCF over the past couple of years. You pretty much nailed it. He pitches to contact. He has good control. He's not going to like make unforced errors, but if you want to beat him, you're just going to have to hit that day. And he does pitch to contact, so the Bulls will have their opportunities in that regard. Grant Siegel, I mean, anytime that you're a starting pitcher right out of high school and you make all conference, which he did in 2022,
Two.
2022, yeah, that means you're definitely a dude and you definitely got some things going for you. So I'm not surprised to see his name resurface. I actually was, I was like Siegel. I was like, I know that last name. Googled him, and of course, that is the same kid that pitched on Tulane and pitched very well against USF in 2022 as a freshman, like you mentioned. Don't know too much about the Saturday starter, but like you said, he was a quarterback at Campbell. Is doing well so far this year. Actually, the best guy statistically for them so far. So it's gonna be going to be a good matchup. And I think like their starters have actually gone a little deeper into games cumulatively than our Saturday Sunday guys. But like you said, Riley has 10, Siegel has 9.1. So we really need our weekend starters to step up, actually, to match what they're bringing to the table. I mean, James Hill, if he can do what he did last Saturday and maybe get us to five, maybe even six innings, I think that'd be huge, and that'll match the quality that Hartley has shown so far. And then Sunday, I mean, I think it's time, for the Cardenas to really like put it all together. He's shown flashes. He shows some nice pitches. He's physically imposing. He's got velocity. He has all the tools. And as one of the announcers said, he's like, I think it was one of the coaches told the announcers, one of the Georgia Southern announcers, the Cardenas might be the most physically gifted pitcher in our weekend rotation right now in terms of talent and ability. And it would be great to see him put it all together on Sunday. And I think he could definitely do that. I want to say he was the scout from D1 Baseball said during the summer that he had one of the most impressive individual outings of any pitcher he saw all summer in the Northwoods League. So this, the potential of the Cardenas is still there. He's got the velocity. He's got pitchability. I mean, you just got to put it all together to match what Grant Siegel will likely bring on Sunday. So I think that might be like a X factor, kind of key to watch, right? Is like if our starting pitchers play up to their capabilities, especially on Saturday and Sunday, then I think we match up really well. And I would say maybe we even have an edge in the bullpen in that situation because our bullpen would not be as worn out and tired if we're getting 5 to 6 innings from each of our starters. I think that would go a really long way. So that's the thing I'm watching for this weekend.
Yeah, what I'm looking for is with a new head coach and a bunch of new faces, both on both sides of the ball, both on our pitching staff and with the bats. But I just hope that they understand how big this series is. It's really hard to come onto a new team and just become invested at a visceral level as to how much we hate UCF. But I truly hope that Coach Hannes and some of the proven veterans on our team that have experience in this rivalry, I really hope that they do a good job delivering this message and really getting these guys invested into how, while this is a non-conference game, early season winter matchup, I need these guys to want to make them bleed. And I don't have anything else to say about that. I hope that these guys come rearing and ready to go because that's how I'm going to be out when watching these games. And I know all of us in Bruin are just, we've had this matchup circled since the offseason. So I really hope that our guys come ready to play.
I was just gonna kind of echo some of your sentiments there. I think it's pretty cool because I really love the fact that Mitch Hanna's as our coach. Like, no matter who we're playing, like, he always talks about how it takes a lot of intensity to get results. It takes a lot of intensity to beat good teams. Like, and that's something that he harps on regardless of who you're playing. And I think that there's plenty of enough guys on this team that have been at USF and understand the significance of the rivalry. Also local, a lot of guys from Tampa Bay. We have guys that understand, and I mean, the great thing about Coach Hannes is that regardless of who we're playing, his message to the team is going to be, you got to be intense, you got to play hard, you got to be focused. And I really feel like I do feel like that volume will be turned up a few notches when the guys, see that, the fans are going to be a little more into it than usual, given the fact of who is on the other side of the lines. And I think that the players will feed off of that. I know my brother will be there Saturday or Friday. I plan to be there Saturday. And I'm just, curious to see how the crowd, also takes into account the fact that it's a rivalry. And in the past times I've seen the crowds for USF get more engaged and active when it's a rivalry game. So I'm just excited to see that.
It will be important, but one thing I know is that that team from Oviedo does travel pretty well. So that just increases how important it is for our fans to get out there this weekend and really show some love to our Bulls. One thing I was talking about in the previous segment was, we're going to have to get after these starting pitchers early, but there's not much reprieve when it comes to their bullpen as well, Mark. I mean, they've got 3 to 4 names that have been dominating the appearances that they've come out in, with I'll just mention them in passing: Matt Saucer, Angela Smith, a very familiar name, and Dominic Castellano, and then lastly Chris Sosnowski. Just for example, Matt Saucer transfer from FSU. He's had two long relief appearances for UCF this season, but he's averaging a strikeout per inning pitched, and he's posted a line of 1.29 ERA in 7 innings, 5 hits, 1 earned, 7 Ks, and 4 walks. Angelo Smith, a transfer from Indian River State College, he has had 3 appearances thus far, going 2 innings in each outing. Gave up his first earned run of the season against FAU in the midweek loss this week. He's gone 6 innings, 3 hits, 1 earned, with a line of 7-1 K to walk ratio. A guy that we're a lot more familiar with, who we've seen a lot of, is Dominic Castellano. Not only have we seen a lot of him, he's a Tampa native, a 3-year letterman at Jesuit High School. Last year, he led the team with batting average against, posting a 164 batting average against, and finished second in ERA on the staff at 2.83, and K's at 68. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm glad you're mentioning Dominic Cassiano because, he's just legitimately really nasty, especially as a lefty, especially against us, a lineup that has a lot of lefties. And I think it places a premium on the fact that we need to get out to leads and we need to start well, start games well. Generally speaking, we've been doing that. That's awesome. That trend needs to continue because if you're trying to make a comeback win in the last eighth and ninth inning with this guy on the back end, it's going to be really hard. And it's like that, when you play against better teams. I mean, they're from the Big 12, they're power conference at this point. But yeah, I mean, it's what you're saying, speaking to how well he's done. I mean, last year, having that 164 batting average against, I mean, I think half our lineup bats lefty practically, so we need to get out to leads and maintain them.
I'd like to see that line. I was thinking about that last night when Villarreal was on the mound, just absolutely dominating. But I would like to know how we match up against lefties versus righties. I know that I think it's going to be heavily favored against right-handed pitchers for us this season. But I mean, we're talking about Castellano also leading the entire Big 12, which is a very good conference in baseball, in ERA and hits allowed per nine last year. So I'm done giving this guy all the credit he deserves. I'll tip my hat to him and move on. He's proven to go 3 innings in both of his appearances this year. So we've seen kind of, different roles from those different guys mentioned thus far. And they've kind of got whatever they need, whether it's, we need a guy to come in and get 3 outs, or if USF is able to get on a starting pitcher earlier, we need a guy to come in and do what Villarreal did on Tuesday and kind of slow the roll a little bit, slow everything down, and stabilize that game a little bit and allow for UCF to try to get back into a game. But lastly is the junior right-hander, Chris Sosnowski. It's his third year on staff with UCF. Again, a Tampa native, playing 2 years of varsity ball for Jesuit High School, and was named most improved player his senior year. This inning, he has not given up an earned run in 5 2/3 innings. He's only given up 3 hits, posting a line of 8 Ks and no walks. I don't know how much more you would want from a relief pitcher, but if you've got anything else on what you would look for out of a relief guy, I'm all ears. He's proven to go deep into games. In his last outing, he against Bryant, he relieved Riley Hartley on a Saturday start and finished the last 4 innings of the game to shore up the win for them. So those are the four names that really came to mind in terms of their bullpen for me. Not trying to give them too much attention, but I do want to give credit where it's due, and they deserve a lot of credit what they're doing over there in Oviedo, with their pitching staff, both on the starting end and on the back end. So, Mark, go ahead.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think that's definitely a result of second year head coach Rich Wallace. It's funny enough, the D1 Baseball podcast actually had him as their guest this week. So I actually listened to a little bit of him talking about his team, UCF. And the one thing that I heard him talk a lot about was that he builds his team is built on pitching and defense, defending athletically. Pitching obviously is like a major point of emphasis with that program, and kind of said, they just try to score runs any way they can. And thinking of the way he describes his points of emphasis, pretty similar to our mindset, and thinking about being diverse and how you score, and really realizing that, pitching and defense travels, like you can do that every day. Sometimes the bats aren't there, but if you pitch and defend, you always have a chance to win. And it sounds like, and I know that's what they do. So I think it's going to be a really good series. I think it's going to be really good battles, every single day. Just can't wait to see it all unfold. But with that being said, I highly encourage, everybody in the Tampa Bay area, you have opportunity, come out and watch this game, or watch any of these games. I think you're going to be in for a treat for sure.
High quality baseball ahead.
For sure.
And absolutely.
All right, that's all I got. But so for John and myself, signing off, and look forward to talking to everyone soon. Go
Go
Bulls.
Bulls.